Epilogue. Brideshead Revisited.
"The worst place we've struck yet," said the commanding officer. "No facilities, no amenities, and brigade sitting right on top of us. There's one pub in Flight St. Mary with capacity for about 20. That, of course, will be out of bounds for officers. There's a naffy in the camp area. I hope to run transport once a week to Melstead Carberry. Marchmain is 10 miles away, and damn all when you get there. It will therefore be the first concern of company officers to organise recreation for their men. M.O., I want you to take a good look at the lakes to see if they're fit for bathing."
"Very good, sir."
"Brigade expects us to clean up the house for them. I should have thought some of those half-shaven scrimshankers I see lounging round headquarters might have saved us the trouble. However, Ryder, you will find a fatigue party of 50 and report to the quartering commandant at the house at 10:45. He'll show you what we're taking over."
"Very good, sir."
"Our predecessors do not seem to have been very enterprising. The valley has great potentialities for an assault course and a mortar range. Weapon training officer, make a recce this morning and get something laid on before brigade arrives."
"Very good, sir."
"I'm going out myself with the adjutant to recce training areas. Anyone happen to know this district?"
I said nothing.
"That's all then, get cracking."
"Wonderful old place in its way," said the quartering commandant. "Pity to knock it about too much."
He was an old, retired, reappointed lieutenant colonel from some miles away. We met in the space before the main doors, where I had my half-company fallen in, waiting for orders. "Come in. I'll soon show you over. It's a great warren of a place, but we've only requisitioned the ground floor and half a dozen bedrooms. Everything else upstairs is still private property. Mostly crammed full of furniture. You never saw such stuff. Priceless, some of it. There's a caretaker and a couple of old servants live at the top. They won't be any trouble to you. And a blitzed R.C. Padre, whom Lady Julia gave a home to. Jittery old bird, but no trouble. He's opened the chapel. That's in bounds for the troops. Surprising lot use it, too. The place belongs to Lady Julia Flight, as she calls herself now. She was married to Mottram, the minister of whatever it is. She's abroad in some woman's service, and I keep an eye on things for her. Queer thing, the old Marquis leaving everything to her. Rough on the boys. Now, this is where the last lot put the clerks. Plenty of room, anyway. I've had the walls and fireplaces boarded up, you see. Valuable old work underneath. Hello, someone seems to have been making a beast of himself here. Destructive beggars soldiers are. Lucky we spotted it, or it would have been charged to you chaps. This is another good-sized room. Used to be full of tapestry. I'd advise you to use this for conferences."
"I'm only here to clean up, sir. Someone from brigade will allot the rooms."
"Oh, well, you've got an easy job. Very decent fellows, the last lot. They shouldn't have done that to the fireplace, though. How did they manage it? Looks solid enough. I wonder if it can be mended."
"I expect the brigadier will take this for his office. The last did. It's got a lot of painting that can't be moved, done on the walls. As you see, I've covered it up as best I can, but soldiers get through anything, as the brigadier's done in the corner. There was another painted room outside the pillars. Modern work, but, if you ask me, the prettiest in the place. It was a signal office, and they made absolute hay of it. Rather a shame. This eyesore is what they used as the mess. That's why I didn't cover it up. Not that it would matter much if it did get damaged. Always reminds me of one of the costlier knocking shops, you know, Maison Japonaise, and this was the ante-room."
It did not take us long to make our tour of the echoing rooms. Then we went outside on the terrace. "Those are the other ranks, latrines and wash-house. Can't think why they built them just there. It was done before I took the job over. All this used to be cut off from the front. We laid the road through the trees, joining it up with the main drive. Unsightly, but very practical. Awful lot of transport comes in and out, cuts the place up too. Look where one careless devil went smack through the box hedge and carried away all that balustrade. Did it with a 3-ton lorry. You'd think he'd had a Churchill tank, at least. That fountain is rather a tender spot with our landlady. The young officers used to lark about in it on guest nights, and it was looking a bit the worse for wear, so I wired it in and turned the water off. Looks a bit untidy now. All the drivers throw their cigarette ends and the remains of the sandwiches there, and you can't get to it to clean it up since I put the wire round. Florid great thing, isn't it? Well, if you've seen everything, I'll push off. Good day to you." His driver threw a cigarette into the dry basin of the fountain, saluted, and opened the door of the car. I saluted, and the quartering commandant drove away through the new metalled gap in the lime trees.
"Hooper," I said when I had seen my men started, "do you think I can safely leave you in charge of the work party for half an hour?"
"I was just wondering where we could scrounge some tea."
"For Christ's sake," I said, "they've only just begun work."
"They're awfully browned off."
"Keep them at it." "Righty-o."
I did not spend long on the desolate ground floor rooms, but went upstairs and wandered down the familiar corridors, trying doors that were locked, opening doors into rooms piled to the ceiling with furniture. At length I met an old housemaid carrying a cup of tea. "Why," she said, "isn't it Mr. Ryder?" "It is. I was wondering when I should meet someone I know. Mrs. Hawkins is up in her old room. I was just taking her some tea." "I'll take it for you," I said, and passed through the baize doors, up to the carpeted stairs to the nursery. Nanny Hawkins did not recognise me until I spoke, and my arrival threw her into some confusion. It was not until I had been sitting some time by her fireside that she recovered her old calm. She, who had changed so little in all the years I knew her, had lately become greatly aged. The changes of the last years had come too late in her life to be accepted and understood. Her sight was failing, she told me, and she could see only the coarsest needlework. Her speech, sharpened by years of gentle conversation, had reverted now to the soft peasant tones of its origin. "Only myself here, and the two girls, and poor Father Membling, who was blown up, not a roof to his head, nor a stick of furniture, till Julia took him in with the kind heart she's got, and his nerves something shocking. Lady Brideshead too, March Main it is now, who I ought by rights to call her ladyship now, but it doesn't come natural. It was the same with her, first when Julia and Cordelia left to the war. She came here with the two boys, and then the military men turned them out, so they went to London, nor they hadn't been in the house not a month, and Bridie away with the yeomanry, the same as his poor lordship, when they were blown up too, everything gone, all the furniture she brought here and kept in the coach-house. Then she had another house outside London, and the military took that too, and there she is now, when I last heard, in a hotel at the seaside, which isn't the same as your own home, is it? It doesn't seem right. Did you listen to Mr. Mottram last night? Very nasty he was about Hitler. I said to the girl Effie, who does for me, if Hitler was listening, and if he understands English, which I doubt, he must feel very small. Who would have thought of Mr. Mottram doing so well, and so many of his friends too that used to stay here? I said to Mr. Wilcox, who comes to see me regular on the bus from Melstead twice a month, which is very good of him, and I appreciate it. I said, we were entertaining angels unawares, because Mr. Wilcox never liked Mr. Mottram's friends, which I never saw, but used to hear about from all of you, nor Julia didn't like them, but they've done very well, haven't they? At last I asked her, have you heard from Julia? From Cordelia only last week, and they're together still as they have been all the time, and Julia sent me love at the bottom of the page. They're both very well, though they couldn't say where, but Father Membling said, reading between the lines, it was Palestine, which is where Bridie's yeomanry is, so that's very nice for them all. Cordelia said they were looking forward to coming home after the war, which I'm sure we all are, though whether I live to see it's another story. I stayed with her for half an hour, and left promising to return often. When I reached the hall, I found no sign of work, and Hooper looking guilty. They had to go off to draw the bedstraw. I didn't know till Sergeant Block told me. I don't know whether they're coming back. Don't know? What orders did you give? Well, I told Sergeant Block to bring them back if he thought it was worthwhile. I mean, if there was time before dinner. It was nearly 12. You've been hotted again, Hooper. That straw was to be drawn any time before 6 tonight. Oh, Lord, sorry, Ryder. Sergeant Block, it's my own fault for going away. Fall in the same party immediately after dinner, bring them back here, and keep them here till the job's done. Rightio. I say, did you say you knew this place before? Yes, very well. It belongs to friends of mine. And as I said the words, they sounded as odd in my ears as Sebastian's had done, when, instead of saying, it's my home, he said, it's where my family live. It doesn't seem to make any sense. One family in a place this size, what's the use of it? Well, I suppose Brigade are finding it useful. But that's not what it was built for, is it? No, I said, not what it was built for. Perhaps that's one of the pleasures of building, like having a son, wondering how he'll grow up. I don't know. I never built anything, and I forfeited the right to watch my son grow up. I'm homeless, childless, middle-aged, loveless, Hooper. He looked to see if I was being funny, decided that I was, and laughed. Now, go back to camp, keep out of the CO's way if he's back from his recce, and don't let on to anyone that we've made a nonsense of the morning. Okey, Ryder. There was one part of the house I had not yet visited, and I went there now. The chapel showed no ill effects of its long neglect. The Art Nouveau paint was as fresh and bright as ever. The Art Nouveau lamp burned once more before the altar. I said a prayer, an ancient, newly learned form of words, and left, turning towards the camp. And as I walked back, and the cookhouse bugle sounded ahead of me, I thought, The builders did not know the uses to which their work would descend. They made a new house with the stones of the old castle. Year by year, generation after generation, they enriched and extended it. Year by year, the great harvest of timber in the park grew to ripeness, until, in sudden frost, came the age of Hooper. The place was desolate, and the work all brought to nothing. Quomodo sedet sola civitas, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And yet, I thought, stepping out more briskly towards the camp, where the bugles, after a pause, had taken up the second call, and were sounding, pick 'em up, hot potatoes! And yet that is not the last word. It is not even an apt word. It is a dead word from 10 years back. Something quite remote from anything the builders intended has come out of their work, and out of the fierce little human tragedy in which I played. Something none of us thought about at the time. A small red flame, a beaten copper lamp of deplorable design, relit before the beaten copper doors of a tabernacle. The flame which the old knights saw from their tombs, which they saw put out. That flame burns again for other soldiers, far from home, farther in heart than Acre or Jerusalem. It could not have been lit but for the builders and the tragedians, and there I found it this morning, burning new among the old stones. I quickened my pace and reached the hut which served us for our anteroom.
"You're looking unusually cheerful today," said the second in command.
The end.